Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague Stuart Mandel. We are taping Sunday morning after a really, really fun Saturday. Lots of drama, Stu, some big upsets. And there was a stretch, as our buddy Max Olson wrote about, where it felt like for about 30 minutes, you needed to be on like 8 TVs and you needed probably 16 sets of eyeballs. I don't know if my math is right on that, but you get my point. Your biggest takeaway from this weekend was what?
I guess it's a tie between, wow, Arkansas, Sam Pittman, these guys are for real. They have now not just beaten, but the word I keep using is bullied, Texas and Texas A&M. And clearly they're the, and we're going to get into this, but they're the, I think the revelation team of the first month of the season. And then the flip side of that is, it's just so surreal to see Clemson be this bad. I mean, we're talking about a team and a program that have made the playoffs 6 straight years, that have been, the if you will, the 1B to Alabama's 1A for, you know, whatever this stretch of period. And they can't move the football. They lost to NC State. And I want to give a shout out to Dave Dorn, because we criticized him pretty badly on this podcast just a couple weeks ago. But at the end of the day, that's a team that lost handily to Mississippi State. It is not like that, you know, we were so used to Clemson just dominating the ACC. And first they were mortal against Georgia Tech, mortal against NC State. The upshot of which is, I think the ACC for the first time in ages is just completely wide open.
Completely wide open, meaning awful, or because...
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah. Like right now, there are two undefeated teams, Wake Forest. Dave Clawson quietly does a terrific job there. And Jeff Hafley, who I think you and I both think is a rising star over at Boston College, had a nice win over Missouri. But I'm with you in the big picture takeaways. I was really impressed by how Arkansas just dominated Texas. But then to see what they did to Texas A&M, who is a team a lot of people have been trying to sell as a playoff contender. They didn't look good against Colorado, by the way. I mean, I don't want to go down the transitive property.
Which college football fans love to do.
Yeah. But like a couple of weeks ago, they had their hands full with a pretty mediocre Colorado team who then got blew out by Minnesota, who's not very good, who Minnesota just lost to Bowling Green, a 31-point underdog.
Oh my gosh. That was one of the craziest scores I can remember.
Yeah, I was actually watching that on one of our small screens when PJ Fleck went for it on 4th and 1 inside his own 30, doesn't get it, and then basically gives BG a touchdown and they're losing. But back to Arkansas. They're the kings of the old Southwest Conference right now. I mean, yep. They really took it to both A&M. Took it really to both A&M and UT. I feel like they have a strong argument to say they are the second best team in the SEC West. I'm interested to see what happens when they play Georgia, because Sam Pittman obviously coached there, knows Kirby Smart well, knows what made Georgia really good. We'll get to another big matchup in the SEC a little later on. But as much as that was like, whoa, it was watching Clemson. Their offense has been putrid.
Let's stick with Arkansas and A&M for now.
Okay. you know, I'm interested to see, like, to me, this is more of a wow thing than a woe thing in terms of A&M. Like, I think A&M is still probably a 9-3, 10-2 possible team. But their offense is really limited right now. Zach Calzada struggles. You know, who knows how good Haynes King will be when he gets back. I think that's a TBD. Their offensive line does not look that good. They have good running backs and a really good tight end, but I don't know. And I don't want to make this a referendum on Jimbo Fisher getting new contracts all the time. But to me, it's more how bad Arkansas used to be and how impressive they are now. I mean, very few people, I don't know anybody personally in the media who was like, when they hired Sam Pittman, they were like, expected him not even to be anywhere near this good, but just to be a really good hire. I mean, usually you're seeing people will get plucked from the coordinator level. He's just been a career offensive line coach. And I feel like, you know, the parallels are not, you know, you just don't find a lot of examples where somebody like that makes such a change in a program that is in such a loaded division, right? You and I both thought Brett Bielema, you know, had done a really good job at Wisconsin and seemed to fit at Arkansas, and he could not get it going there. Sam Pittman has wasted a little time. And by the way, his first year came in the craziness of the pandemic. So it was like, that's hard to change a culture anyway, but especially in the face of that. So he's done a really good job. I think Barry Odom was a very good hire for him. Obviously, he's a former head coach himself with SEC roots and has done really well. He shut down the air raid last year. He gave Jimbo all sorts of problems. He gave Sark all sorts of problems. You know, I'm interested to see how much higher Arkansas can go from here.
It's always hard to predict a hire. I have never had one tweet thrown back in my face more than this unfortunate one. Now, you remember Sam Pittman was one of four new SEC coaches hired that cycle, several of whom were really big names. So I, unfortunately, and I will own it, the SEC West is now six highly established head coaches: Saban, Malzahn, Ogeron, Jimbo, Kiffin, Leach, and Sam Pittman. Best of luck, Arkansas. Every time Arkansas wins a football game, the Arkansas fans bone find that and send it back to me. I don't know what I can do at this point. I reported myself to Freezing Cold Takes a while ago. It's just going to live in infamy, I guess. But
how about we do this? If Arkansas goes on to win the SEC as kind of an olive branch to the fan base, you would get a tattoo of Sam Pittman on your shoulder.
No, I'm not going to agree to that, because every time, I feel like you always hear these stories of people throwing out stuff like that because they're sure it's never going to happen, and then it ends up happening. Didn't Tom Herman have to get a tattoo once? I can't remember what the circumstances of that were, but he agreed to something and they had to do it. You know, I think, first of all, it has just reinforced how incredibly atrocious the Chad Morris era was, when they were winless in the SEC for 2 years, losing at home to North Texas and San Jose State and whatnot. And the reality is, most of these guys were already there. Now, he recruited KJ Jefferson, give him credit for that. There was a moment early in the game when Gary Danielson did an overlay of Cam Newton running a keeper against LSU, I believe, in 2010, and KJ Jefferson doing the same against Texas. And it was like, okay, come on, guys. Come on, Gary. You're really going to compare him to Cam Newton? Then Jamie Erdahl, sideline reporter, did a whole thing about how much he idolizes Cam Newton. And I swear, on the very next play, he threw an 85-yard touchdown. You know, this is his first year really running the offense, and it's made a huge difference. But I mean, I think also, you know, Pittman, since he's gotten there, you mentioned Barry Odom, they've been very good on defense. And you turn around and you look at Texas yesterday, I would not have seen this coming. Texas Tech goes into that game 3-0, their fans starting to feel optimistic, and Texas hangs 70 on them. So say what you will about Texas and how they're always overrated, I think they've got a pretty good offense, and that's a team Arkansas shut down as well. So no time to rest on your laurels in the SEC. They're playing Georgia this week, number 2 Georgia. What shot do you give the Razorbacks?
I would give them a 30% chance of winning. And, you know, by the end of this podcast, I might talk myself into 40%. And the reason why is we've seen them play two legit opponents, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to diminish, you know, obviously Clemson is sputtering, but still Clemson has a lot of athletes on their team. You know, so Georgia yesterday, I watched some of that, like that they could have won. If somebody said, can you beat them by 100? They would have beaten yes. Vandy by 100. But to me, what's going to be interesting is you have such a physically gifted team in the trenches, especially in the front seven, as Georgia is. What I wonder about is the one area where Georgia seems to be a little bit shaky at this point is the secondary. Can they take advantage of it? Can Trey Burks is a big time receiver. He's 6'3", he's 225, has these huge, you know, 5XL hands. He was the one who hit the 85-yard touchdown. Like, he's a good complement to what they have in the run game. Can he get loose? I mean, I don't know. They're battle tested and they're impressive. I still think Georgia is going to be the better team. And who knows? It's hard to have back-to-back weeks. There was the Georgia Southern game in between the Texas blowout and then the Texas A&M. I don't want to call it a beatdown because it was only 20-10, but it definitely, I think anybody who watched that game, you would not have thought, oh, if these two teams played 10 times, I feel like Arkansas probably would have won 8 of them. The way it was, like, nothing felt fluky about that at all.
No, Arkansas's offense obviously quieted down once KJ Jefferson got hurt. He was out most of the second half, but I just never, it's just, I don't know if it says more about A&M or Arkansas, but I never thought A&M was going to be able to come back and win because their offense was so ineffective. Remember, coming into the season with A&M, it was, okay, they're coming off this great season, and they bring a lot back, especially on defense, and they got these two great running backs, but they had questions at quarterback and offensive line, and they have not answered either of them.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I had an idea that I wanted to spring on you real quick. Let's predict the final SEC West standings go.
You're talking about 1-7?
1-7, how will the SEC West play out?
Okay, I will say Alabama is going to be number one. Mm-hmm. I think Arkansas is number two.
Wow, there you go.
I think, I don't know. Right now, 3, 4, and 5 are tough calls at this point. Actually, it's like the one team I feel confident is Mississippi State's probably going to be last.
Yeah, I agree on that.
But after that, I don't know. I really don't, because like, I feel like we're going to find out a lot more about Ole Miss. I'm not ready to buy all in on Ole Miss. Yeah, their defense looks improved quite a bit, but I'm still need to see a lot more from them. Auburn had their hands full with Georgia State. They got the ball run on them a ton. I mean, I'm not sold that, you know, they've solved the quarterback problems. I could see TJ Finley going back to LSU and playing well, but I just don't think consistently. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Auburn is sixth out of that group, out of the seven. And then I don't know. I mean, it's a tough call. I would say Arkansas 2. I'm going to say right now, the way A&M's offense is, like, I have more confidence in Max Johnson and LSU's receivers than I do in Zach Calzada and A&M's offense. Like, I would say Arkansas 2, Ole Miss 3, LSU 4, A&M 5.
Yeah, I've got Alabama 1. I got Ole Miss 2. I think this week's Alabama-Ole Miss game is going to be fascinating. Arkansas 3, LSU 4, A&M 5, Auburn 6, Mississippi State 7. The TJ Finley development is interesting because, first of all, I forgot he was there. And second of all, Bo Nix, I think people have wondered why this didn't happen sooner. He's been given every shot at Auburn. So they finally made a change. And lo and behold, TJ Finley leads them back. So that'll be an interesting storyline to watch. But I don't know. I'm not all that bullish on them. But wow, two games next week in the SEC, Georgia, Arkansas, Alabama, Ole Miss could be the toughest games those two teams play. I know obviously Georgia's got Florida, but you know, it's great to have the number one and two teams. And by the way, I don't know that we know that much about Georgia yet, because so much of the reason they're number two in the country is because of what they did against Clemson. And now it's like, oh yeah, I guess a lot of people are going to hold Clemson to 3 points. So they'd obviously, like you said, pick their score against Vanderbilt, but this will be more of a measuring stick for them. Okay, speaking of Clemson, you know, I think after the Georgia game, certainly, but even after Georgia Tech, you felt like they're going to figure it out at some point. They've got DJ, they've got Will Shipley, they've got all these 4- and 5-star recruits, and we're so used to them being good on offense, like, okay, they're off to a slow start, but they'll figure it out at some point. After yesterday, I just think they're bad, and it's really puzzling how it got this bad this fast. Their defense is still very good, but their defense can't carry them for a whole, I mean, NC State had the ball for almost 42 minutes, and they lost James Skalski at one point. They lost Brian Brise at one point, and I think they just got worn down. So what happens from here in the ACC? I do this little, at the end of the night, to help me kind of like process everything that happened, I just do in my notes app, like a top 25 just for myself. It's not to be published or anything. And I don't put that much thought into it. It's not like researching things, just top of my head. I only had two ACC teams in there, Wake Forest and BC, and they were 24th and 25th. We're talking about a Power 5 conference that I'm not sure has much, if any, top 25 teams.
I'm with you on that. I don't know how anybody could have Clemson after what they've done so far. They're basically 1-2 against FBS opponents, and they've looked pretty dreadful in those. In the other game, basically, it was close to them losing, albeit Georgia Tech looks much improved, but it's still, I don't think anybody looks at them as a top 15 team either. So when you say they're bad, you know, that was the word you used. They're bad as in you think Clemson could be a 5-7 team this year?
No, not with that defense, but I certainly don't see them running the table to finish 10-2.
So they're mediocre. Bad to me as a sub 500 team, because this is a, you know, I get it. They're a bad.
No, I just meant the offense is bad. You know, with that defense.
What's interesting, Stu, is, you know, you're talking about the talent on the team. I would and I don't know this off the top of my head, but I suspect it might be the case. This team probably now on Clemson may have more 4- and 5-stars than the first national title team they had that
absolutely
won.
Absolutely do.
You know, and they're nowhere near as good. Now, I think you're going to see a bunch of stories about what is exactly wrong with the offense. It's not just the offensive line. It's not just the Travis Etienne and Trevor Lawrence have left town. There's a bunch of things that have kind of, you know, happened, I think, at once. But man, it's fascinating because on one hand, I think people around the sport, and I don't think people dislike Clemson, because I don't think most, you know, it was like, there are going to be people who always root against Notre Dame, because I think Notre Dame is more of an established brand. And there are going to be people who root against USC or root against Texas or Ohio State because it has more of a roots. I don't think with Clemson, they've been really good for 6-7 years. But before that, it was, you know, I don't think they were like a team that people outside the Atlantic coast were buzzing about. And so now to see them clearly take a huge step back, I think one thing people will look at is, hey, there's going to be some new blood coming out of there now, because if they're not the team, somebody else is going to step into that spot, especially when you see, you know, Ohio State, Oklahoma not looking especially good. Yes, they are still undefeated, but I think that's one of the things that has been kind of a interesting factor is, like you said, in the SEC West, we know Alabama's really good. We're impressed by Arkansas, but there's, you know, there's going to be teams that emerge that weren't anywhere near this good. And maybe Arkansas is one of them. You know, I'd be kind of stunned if Clemson's spot as the SEC undefeated champ was taken by a Wake Forest or BC, but who knows? I mean,
I don't think the ACC is going to be in the playoff this year.
Do you think the ACC will have one team in the top 15 at Thanksgiving?
It's top 15, huh? If it is, who's it going to be? Wake?
I think your answer is going to be no. You know why? Because I feel like as bad as their offense was, Clemson's going to host BC, who's undefeated.
BC, it should be noted, beat Missouri on Saturday. So that's not, you know, they're not one of the top teams in the SEC, but they beat an SEC team. Also, we should mention UNC, right? Trendy preseason top 10 team. Mm-hmm. If you had said before the season that Clemson's not going to win the ACC, who's going to win instead? A lot of people would have said UNC. Rough first game against Virginia Tech. Then they win the next two, including they put up 59 against Virginia. And then they turn around and get their butts kicked by Georgia Tech. Good for Jeff Collins. That's kind of their first really big win in his third season. But, man, with Sam Howell, with all that, with those great recruits, they're 2-2. They're trying to figure things out. So, no, I think you're right. I don't think they'll have a top 15 team. As of this recording, the AP poll has not come out yet. The coaches poll has. Take this with a grain of salt. They have Clemson still not only still in there, but at number 19, although they fell 12 spots. And then they have Wake at number 25. BC is the second one out. NC State is the third one out. Wow, they don't have Texas ranked. That's a puzzler. So, yeah, I think it's back to the dark ages for the ACC. You know, before Clemson and before Jameis, Florida State, people may not remember this now, but you know, in the BCS days, they were the laughingstock of the BCS conferences for a long time. I think they were like 2-13 in BCS bowls at one point. 2006, the year Wake Forest won the ACC. You know, I mean, the crazy thing is that Florida State may be the worst team in the whole conference. Florida State is one of your flagship programs.
They are 0-4. They got beat, and they were getting blown out early by Louisville. They got beat at home, 0-4. Last week, you didn't think there was. Did you say that you don't think there was any chance that Mike Norvell would get fired after year two?
I still think that.
You don't think there's any chance?
Very, very minimal chance.
If he goes 3-9,
the AD gave him the vote of confidence. I just think that. You would set that. I mean, they're as bad as the program is now, you would make it even worse if you change coaches twice in 3 years with the early signing period, which puts you behind the eight ball. So basically,
you're thinking logically. But remember, they fired Willie Taggart before 2 years was even up.
Right. Well, they thought that was as bad as it could get, but it's getting worse.
It's actually much worse now. Yeah. Willie Taggart didn't lose to anybody. Like, by the way, Jacksonville State is 2-2. They're 1-2. They're like, they're not like a big time. It's not like they lost to North Dakota State or South Dakota State.
Well, let's say Florida State goes 3-9 and you fire him. Now you've got another coaching transition. Now you've got another lost class. Twice in 3 years, you're going to have one of these transitional classes that with the early signing period are very hard to salvage. Then guys are going to enter into the portal because whenever there's a coaching change, you get a lot of transfers.
You're speaking logically.
You would never think to put what's that?
You're speaking logically, and I don't disagree with you.
You become Kansas, who turns out coaches every couple years and can never.
They fired a coach in less than 2 years. Kansas didn't even do that.
And I don't think they can. That's why I don't think they can do it again. You can't do it again that quickly. So Norvell's going to get another year at least. And he was a great coach at Memphis. They were getting hammered early by Louisville, and then they started to come back. My guess is you'll see Florida State get better over the course of the season, in part because they play in such a bad conference. It's hard to believe they will finish, at the end of the day, that they'll be worse than Duke. Syracuse actually is starting. That came out of nowhere. Syracuse got so bad the last couple of years. And then the other night, lo and behold, they beat Liberty, and they're 3-1, and they have a very highly ranked defense. So, I think Florida State will get better. They might be 4-8 at the end of the day, but they'll be not quite as bad as it seems now.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
a
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
You mentioned the coaches poll. A quick, quibble with this. Arkansas, we loved up them for the first 10 minutes of the podcast. How could they be ranked behind Ohio State? Ohio State, which lost at home to Oregon, which had their hands full with Tulsa, who's not particularly good. They did beat Minnesota, but Minnesota just lost to Bowling Green. And somehow they're ranked above Arkansas, who blew out Texas.
They're two spots really behind Florida, whose greatest accomplishment this year was almost beating Alabama. I think that the coaches poll is terrible. They don't, I think you'll see the Arkansas a little higher in the AP. I would have them in the top five. Who's got a better pair of wins than Arkansas?
Maybe Penn State, but I'm not sure about that. And that's the extent of it. I mean, I would have Arkansas. Honestly, I would have Arkansas above Oklahoma.
Yep.
I would have, I like Iowa's defense. Iowa had their hands full with CSU, who's not, maybe not higher than Penn State, because Penn State, one of those was on the road too. Notre Dame, Cincinnati, you mentioned Florida, but Ohio State, that's the one we're looking. No, they should not be behind Ohio State.
Yeah, that's just laziness. They moved them up seven spots.
And why is Clemson 19? Why, like,
laziness, not paying attention, not really putting that much thought into it. It's unfortunate the AP hasn't come out at the time we're recording this. But I don't think I'd be surprised if Arkansas's they'll. I'm going to bet. Maybe I'll be wrong by the time this comes out. Arkansas will still be behind OU in the AP poll as well. Speaking of OU. Did you ever think you'd see an Oklahoma West Virginia game and the final score is 16-13?
It doesn't look, some of these things are cyclical. I don't think all of a sudden Lincoln Riley forgot how to coach. But obviously, when the fans were chanting, "We want Caleb," as in Caleb Williams, who was a big recruit for them, a quarterback. So we have Spencer Rattler, who a lot of people anointed as a top pick in the 2022 NFL draft. You did a story the other day on The Athletic about the draft buzz that probably overflowed and why. I don't know if you got into necessarily why Spencer Rattler is struggling so much and why that offense is struggling, but it was more of a quizzical. How exactly did this happen that he got anointed as such a lofty prospect? And obviously a lot of it has to do with the credit that Lincoln Riley gets and the faith that he gets as an offensive coach and quarterback developer. How concerned would you be if you're an Oklahoma fan that all of a sudden now the offense might be the Achilles heel and it's the defense is the one that's going to be the thing holding the banner?
It's ironic because for years their defense was so terrible, and they just felt like if they could just get even an average defense, they'd be able to win the national title. I think their defense is more than average. I think it's great. And now the offense has fallen apart. The Spencer Rattler story you mentioned, and by the way, you can read it on The Athletic, theathletic.com/theaudible, get 50% off an annual subscription. I was really, you and I had said, hey, in coming to the season, it feels a little premature. I had never really kind of taken a deep dive into Spencer Rattler's season last year. He ended up with pretty decent stats. They weren't Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts stats, but that was probably never realistic to begin with. He had a very up and down season. He got benched at one point against Texas. I think if you, in a vacuum, you would have looked at him at the end of the season and been like, hey, that's pretty good for a redshirt freshman, but he's still got a lot to work on. You know, you can tell he's talented, but his footwork's not great. His decision-making can be questionable at times. He gets easily pressured. Instead, the minute after last season ends, he's anointed as the Heisman frontrunner. As soon as the draft last year ended, you see him pop up as the number one pick in the early mocks. And even in August, he's still close going into the season, still number one in a lot of those mocks. So I talked to several draft analysts, one of whom, Daniel Jeremiah at NFL Network, had said, like, yeah, I watched the tape in the summer and I didn't see it. I couldn't say this guy's definitely going to be a high round NFL player. Others said, look, the talent's there. He's just a work in progress, or he's still, figuring out the mental side of it, which is fine and understandable. But once you get that number one pick label, and also let's talk about the NIL component of it for a second, because that's brand new to the sport. And obviously I'm a huge proponent of NIL. I think guys should be allowed to profit off their NIL. But as soon as he unveiled his own logo and was signing autographs for $150 a pop and doing car dealership ads, that I think you can draw a direct line from that to him getting booed so much at the game last night. I'm used to, usually the only time you really hear college fans boo like that is if their team's getting their butt kicked. This was a competitive game. They're right in it. And the quarterback, the star quarterback, is getting booed by his own fans. And I do think that between the external expectations and then him embracing that opportunity to do all those promotional things, you're seeing him treated kind of like a pro athlete.
How do you think this plays out going forward?
I know they're all calling for Caleb Williams, but I mean, Lincoln Riley's not even putting him in the game at all. Right. So I don't think Lincoln Riley, who knows a little thing about quarterbacks, is going to manage his quarterbacks based on what the fans booing. Right. I think he's pretty determined to stick with him. And now it's just a matter of, they don't need to turn into 2017, 2018, 50 point a game offense, because they've got such a good defense. So can they just become a little bit better than they are now? I've noticed a recurring theme, by the way, in college football this year. There's a lot of teams that you expect to have really good offensive lines usually that are really struggling on offensive line. Oklahoma, Clemson,
Notre Dame.
I would throw Wisconsin in there. These are programs that you just assume year after year have a great offensive line. They're really struggling. And I don't know why, other than I've seen a lot of people last night on Twitter suggesting that one of the reasons we're having such a crazy season is because a lot of these teams, the COVID season last year affected their development. Now, I don't know how you could prove that, but offensive line does strike me as a position where when starters move on and you got to break in new guys, usually they haven't played much at all. It's not like defensive line where younger guys rotate in and get some experience. So I don't know, maybe missing, they still played a lot of games last year, but really those new offensive linemen, it's all about practice. And you had a lot of disruptions with people having to go into quarantine for 2 weeks and not getting the bowl practices you usually get. So, but there's no way to prove that, obviously, just a random theory. But I do think it's interesting that, I think it's interesting that after years of, we had just come to assume that this is a sport that's all about quarterbacks and offenses now. And, you know, as soon as Baker Mayfield sets the new passer rating record, then Kyler Murray breaks it. And then Joe Burrow breaks it. And then Mac Jones breaks it. Like, you know, just this is how the sport is now. Offenses, you can't stop these great offenses. This year, you're seeing a lot of defense. Think about the biggest games yesterday, 20-10 score, 16-13. Even Notre Dame, Wisconsin ended up with a lopsided score, but that was, you know, two pick sixes at the end. So, not really. I mean, Alabama Ole Miss could be an example of two really high powered offenses going at it, but that's we're seeing defenses catch up this year.
Towards that end, Oklahoma ranked number 2 in the Big 12 in defense, ranked number 5 in the conference in offense. My, how the times seem to have changed. Before we move on, I want to like bounce a couple of things off you. You tell me just one word, whether you buying or selling them as a legit playoff team. Oregon struggled a little bit with Arizona last night. The final score is not indicative of how tight that game was. You buying Oregon as a serious playoff contender?
Yeah, I'm still buying Oregon as a serious playoff contender because I saw.
Okay. Okay. Oklahoma, serious playoff contender.
Gosh, that's a tough one.
This basically comes down to whether you think their offense is going to go back to being excellent or not.
I don't even think it has to be excellent. It just has to be decent.
Oh, their offense is going to be decent. I mean, I don't.
Yes, I buy them as a contender, but I buy several Big 12 teams as contenders. Can we just talk for a second about Oklahoma State? Who's getting, were they even in that coaches poll I just pulled up?
Yes. They are.
They're 18th. One spot ahead of
so Clemson. You think there is, all right, so you think Oklahoma State is a serious playoff contender?
Well, I think several teams in the Big 12 are really good. And one of the teams that was expected to be is really struggling in Iowa State. And I mean, we on this podcast last week, we answered a mailbag question about Kansas State. We both were very bullish on Kansas State and in particular their defense. And Oklahoma State blew them out. And that was a week after going on the road and beating Boise. I think they're, who do you have more confidence in right now of those two Oklahoma schools?
Oklahoma.
Yeah, still?
Not even hesitating. Yeah, because I watched the Boise State game the other day, and it's like they won by one, and if the ref doesn't blow the call, they lose. You know, the ref inexcusably blew the whistle to, like, stop what should have been a fumble return for a touchdown. So, yes, Oklahoma's offense has struggled. I think Oklahoma's offense is going to bounce back before too long. I think they are.
Do you think Clemson's offense is going to bounce back? Like, do you consider them to be in the same category or
not? No, I do not. I think Clemson has much more bigger issues on offense than Oklahoma does. I don't even think it's close. Hmm. Like, I think Oklahoma, I don't feel that strongly that they're going to win a national title this year, but I think Oklahoma can be a playoff team. I think Clemson is nowhere near a top 25 team right now. I don't care what the coaches poll says after what you watch them look like. I think that they'll be a bowl team. I think they can be a 8-4 team, but no, I don't think Clemson this year is going to turn around that much. I think, by the end of the month, I think Oklahoma could be putting 45 and 50 on people again.
Wow.
That's not wow stuff. Like,
it is wow stuff based on what we're seeing. I mean,
no. Here's
they are really struggling, and you think they're going to turn around and score 45-50.
I do, because I think they have some dynamic skill guys, and I think they and like I don't know. Do I think Spencer Rattler should be the first pick in the draft? No, I definitely don't. Do I think Spencer Rattler can throw for 350 yards in games again? Yes. So
let me ask you this. If Oklahoma has a lot of dynamic skill players, as you said, why is walk-on Drake Stoops, why does he continue to be one of Spencer?
Because I think he's a really reliable slot receiver. And in the air raid and some variation of it, there are guys like that who become really good at finding open space. Okay. And I think sometimes people don't take that guy away. They're going to take away, you know, Hazelwood or some of the other guys who they think is more big play threats. I don't think it's an indictment of OU at all that Drake Stoops has emerged as more of a go-to guy.
Well, really the next 2 weeks, the Sooners go at Kansas State and Red River against Texas. I'll say this, they're not going to beat Texas 16-13. So this offensive explosion that you're saying is going to happen needs to happen before Red River. Because frankly, if you told me today Texas ends up winning the Big 12, I would not be all that surprised. I'm liking what I'm seeing from Steve Sarkisian's offense outside of obviously that Arkansas game.
Okay. Last two for you that I wanted to ask you about. Do you think Notre Dame, after you watched them yesterday with three returns for touchdowns, one in special teams, two on defense, you think Notre Dame is a serious playoff contender, as shaky as their quarterback play has looked and as shaky as their offensive line has looked?
Well, to be a serious playoff contender, they're going to have to beat Cincinnati this week. And I don't think they're going to beat Cincinnati this week.
Okay. There's your answer.
May sound crazy to some people, the group of five team going to South Bend this week after Notre Dame just embarrassed Wisconsin. But I think Notre Dame's defense is really good again, but that they, even yesterday, even in victory, they could not protect the quarterback. And Cincinnati's got a defense that if you can't protect the quarterback, it's going to be really hard for Notre Dame to win that game that way.
Okay. Anything else we need to cover?
Well, I want to with Notre Dame, we this was a very heavily hyped game. Both of the pregame shows were there. So I do want to acknowledge Brian Kelly setting the all-time Notre Dame wins. He's the winningest coach in Notre Dame football history, a program that has had just a few prominent coaches over its history. And I think the most amazing part about that is that I remember in 2016 when everybody wanted him fired, and then they wanted Jack Swarbrick fired for not firing Brian Kelly. And he did something you just don't see that often. He came back from that. He came back from that stronger. Like, Notre Dame as a program is in a much better, much stronger position today than they were during the first half of his tenure. So I saw the interview he did with Tom Rinaldi, where Tom Rinaldi asked him, you know, what he thinks his legacy is now as Notre Dame coach. And he said, the guy who won the most games but hasn't won a championship. You know, I think he's very cognizant of, to truly be considered a great Notre Dame coach, you have to win the national championship at some point. And I don't know that they will. But I do think it's telling that this program that for so many years got mocked because they never win the big game. That was a big game yesterday. And they were, a 6.5 point underdog. They won handily, and it wasn't all that surprising.
He's done a really good job. I think he's made some really, since that time when people thought he was, it's that time when people were thinking whether he should still be the guy there after that bad year, he's made some really good staff moves. And I think that has helped. And I think he has really done a good job of recruiting and developing players and creating that culture there. You know, like, you're right. I mean, the benchmark for him is going to be, he's done everything but win a national title. And I don't know, is, you know, you look at it and you just see in the last few years, especially, you've had to have elite quarterback play to win national titles. And they don't look like they have that right now at all. But they find ways to win.
It was interesting to see Drew Pine come in and kind of, it just seemed like he gave that offense a spark. Now, Brian Kelly shot down any possibility of him starting next week if Cone is available right after the game. But, you know, that's something to keep an eye on now.
Okay.
There were a couple of just quick, we used to do shout outs on this podcast. And there's a couple quick ones I want to do. Jonathan Smith, Oregon State's coach, who former quarterback there, who, you know, Oregon State is one of those programs that if you're not out here on the West Coast, you probably you couldn't name one player on their team. You've never even seen them play anytime recently. But very quietly, they were awful when he took over because of the Gary Anderson situation. And he's gradually gotten a little more respectable each year. And yeah, that was something to watch their offense just do anything it wanted against USC. I know USC is a mess. You documented that well last week, but they went and they won at the Coliseum for the first time since 1960.
Yeah. So I talked to Jonathan a couple of days before the game. And one of the things we talked about was they had a 3-year stretch the year before, right before he took over, where they were dead last each year in the Pac-12 in offense. And it's now flipped. And you watch his quarterback, Chance Nolan, who was a junior college quarterback recruit he took. And he told me he really liked him in terms of just as a distributor, kind of described him as a point guard. He was slinging the ball around and looked really good against a kind of beleaguered USC defense. And this is the first time I think they have been more than two games over 500 since 2015 as a program. Wow. And that's pretty crazy. You know, it's been that bad. And so, you know, hats off to Jonathan Smith. He has done a really good job. He's a guy a lot of people out here on the West Coast, you know, he went to Oregon State as a walk-on from the Pasadena area. He ended up being one of the best quarterbacks they've ever had there, led them to that Fiesta Bowl season where they beat Notre Dame, won 11-1. And I think, I don't know what the ceiling is on this team, but they sure look like they're going to be a bowl team. And that's a big step in that direction for the Beavers.
Well, nobody outside of Oregon in that division is particularly impressive. So I think there's a lot of potential there that, at the very least, to go to a bowl game. UTSA, you made fun of me on the podcast last week for continually being on their bandwagon. They did it again. They beat Illinois earlier in the year. They beat Memphis. The best running back in college football that nobody's heard of since Sierra McCormick went off. Let me see where he ranks right now. Okay, he's number 11 in the country in rushing at 113 yards per game, but I don't think that's giving him full credit for how good he is. So, yeah, that's a program that's never really done anything. They're still fairly new, a fairly new football program. Larry Coker was obviously there for a while. So, what?
And I want to do the last shout out is to Scott Leffler.
Yes.
Bowling Green had not beaten an FBS team in almost 2 years. They went to Minnesota, almost a 31-point underdog, the biggest upset we've seen in a long time between two FBS opponents. And the Gophers went down. Obviously a good loss for the Big Ten, but heck of a day for the Falcons. They didn't put up a lot of yards.
Nothing about that result makes any. I mean, it's just one of those freaky upsets that you couldn't possibly see coming. And I don't know. My guess is that you'll get to the end of the season and be like, "How on earth did that happen?" Tanner Morgan is a very experienced. Has had a lot of great performances at Minnesota, and he was 5 of 13 for 59 yards and two interceptions. They were both at the end when you just kept thinking, well, they're down 14-10. Like all they got to do is go down, score a touchdown and win. And instead he threw interceptions on back-to-back drives. So, and by the way, last week, Minnesota beat Colorado in the Pac-12 30-0. They gave Ohio State a tough game in week one. So we're not talking about necessarily a bad team here, but they were awful against Bowling Green. So yeah, that's just one of those games that, again, I don't think it's a precursor of things to come. I think it was just a absolutely crazy, improbable upset.
All right. Well, we will see you next time later in the week. As always, send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we'll see you later this week.